My name is Michael McCusker, and happy birthday, Nelson Mandela. You might notice that I have a new underwriter, Bikes and Beyond. So, thanks. Well, this Saturday, July 20th, is the 44th anniversary of humanity's first moonwalk. The Eagle Has Landed has become the historic space cry of the capsule that carried two spacemen, two human beings, to Luna. 10 years later to the day, a paper eagle was hatched on planet Earth and proclaimed across the front page the same shout, "The Eagle Has Landed." Saturday marks the 34th birthday of the reborn North Coast Times Eagle, which defied most earthly odds of media longevity for apostasy and impoverishment before it was recrypted nearly 30 years later. The Times Eagle circulation was minuscule, and its impact hardly shook the big trees. Yet the variety of folk who regularly read the newspaper and contributed to it was surprising and impressive. The quality of writing, art, poetry, and photographs that were submitted were usually as high water as a populist literary tsunami, which speaks notably of the indigenous and repotted talent on this turbulent coast who were responsible for what was most worthy of the Times Eagle and a major source of my compulsive obsession as its editor and publisher during the almost 3 years of its resurrection. I'd like to read its first editorial to more or less explain the obsession. And I called it "The Eagle Has Landed." The only corpse successfully revived in recorded history was that of Lazarus, who is said to have lived several years afterward. Jesus Christ is reported to have arisen from the dead, but even the most ardent supporters of his resurrection admit he was on earth only 40 days, and Jonah was still alive when the whale spit him ashore. Countless other claims of resurrection or rebirth have been made, not least among them Count Dracula and Richard Nixon. With such inspired precedent, the North Coast Times Eagle is born again. It is born because First Amendment newspapers have become as rare as the nation's symbol, the bald eagle. The independent press has virtually disappeared, homogenized into the huge corporations that also control the country and probably the world. In this age of the great systems, devotion to any principle other than perpetuation of the status quo seems quaint and naive and faintly dangerous. Yet even the most random demographic of this wild and stormy coast would show that loyalty to the metallic demands of the corporate structure is not a prime aspiration of its inhabitants. To the contrary, this rare splinter of sand between mountains and ocean has traditionally served as a refuge for those seeking the fundamental freedoms guaranteed by the Bill of Rights. Men and women of all ages and preoccupations who have immigrated here or who have remained here demand personal control over their own lives. But even that has come into conflict. The enormous pressures of population and economics threaten the way we live. The great contradictions between freedom and property have finally reached us. Like everything else, the role of the press is in question. There should be no doubt. The press should represent no other special interest than the First Amendment. This becomes patently impossible when the press is controlled by the corporations whose interests are often in conflict with the Constitution. The renegade newsman, A.J. Liebling, once said that of course the press was free to whoever owned one. Exactly 10 years ago, a space capsule named the Eagle landed on the moon, and for the first time in history, a human being stepped onto a planet other than Earth. It was the most spectacular accomplishment in history. Our expectations since then have more or less followed the course of Skylab, which fell out of the sky. We live in an increasingly nasty time. The petroleum age races to its end. Inflation and recession tumble over each other. The country crawls with greed and corruption. Perhaps the war to end wars will occur soon. Even the world's weather is grim. Twice out of the egg and once out of the crypt, the reborn Times Eagle will attempt lighting matches against a darkening wind. And that was the first editorial of the reborn bird, the born-again bird, as I used to call it, on 20 July 1979. And I must say that, give the disclaimer that that was perhaps my opinion and my opinion only. And what I'm about to read follows the same disclaimer. Anywhere in the cosmos, there might be no other opinion than what I'm about to read, which will follow what I have just read, in a sense, about journalism in general in this country. But I should start it off with the fact that you've probably heard, especially on the last program, that a few major retailers are refusing to carry the controversial issue of Rolling Stone because of its cover depicting the person accused, but not yet been to trial or found guilty, of the Boston Marathon bombings. They say it's in bad taste, and one fellow in the previous program said he can't wonder why they feature somebody who has killed people. Well, we always have our generals and war makers in our news all the time, and often we give them a lot of plaudits. But I am reminded that many places refuse to carry the North Coast Times Eagle because of the general contact and leftist politics that it generally followed. So take that into consideration. And I will now like to read something that I wrote. I was going to resurrect the thing a third time, but I didn't. And so this was to be what I was going to put in that third resurrection, with a couple of quotes, first by I.F. Stone, who 1907 to 1989, that was his lifespan. I tried to bring the instincts of a scholar to the service of journalism, to take nothing for granted, to turn journalism into literature, to provide radical analysis with a conscientious concern for accuracy, and in studying the current scene, to do my very best to preserve human values and free institutions. And George Orwell, who lived from 1903 to 1950. If liberty means anything at all, it means the right to tell people what they don't want to hear. And that certainly applies to Rolling Stone, at least its cover. Everybody claims to love the idea of freedom of thought, speech, and performance, but most feel uncomfortable with freedoms they do not endorse, generally regarding them as sources of moral, economic, or patriotic decline of the nation. A free press is the guiding, if not always realized, principle of newspapers and broadcast journalism, the so-called media that dominates our lives and culture, and in particular, small, underfunded, and poorly circulated First Amendment publications and limited-range listener-sponsored radio stations that continue with substantial anxiety to believe that human beings ought by right of birth be free. And if they are not, at the very least, they should be able to think and speak freely without retribution. What might be described as the independent advocacy media operates in the usual climate of verbal and political civil war between those who would enlarge freedoms of speech, thought, and action, and those who would restrict them. This unfettered media is a hodgepodge of a few small presses and public radio stations obsessed with visions unaffected by commerce. They are descended from radical newspapers and magazines that blossomed briefly a few decades ago, and their lineage threads back to the prickly press that fostered the First Amendment, which denies government or anyone else the right to interfere with freedom of speech. The independent advocacy media has few pretensions toward objectivity and fewer illusions about its probability. Most small independent journals and broadcasters are chronically understaffed, underfunded, and generally misunderstood because they seldom reflect popular opinion. They act, often myopically and insensitively, as consciences and torchbearers, and most are fierce and shrill advocates for large or esoteric causes. They are usually on hard times and fail more often than they are replaced. A common trait among peripheral media is to either revive from a few deaths or succumb forever. Small, impoverished, out-on-the-fringe newspapers generally dwell in local obscurity. They are often in stormy opposition to the bland or autocratic community rule and standards of their circulation areas. The fringe is most normally their habitat. They defy the momentum toward the mega-big as they incubate ideas or ideologies that captivate or hold them captive. Radically inclined, usually malnourished, hogtied by their own paradoxes. Independent media's vows of poverty dovetail with probability and implicitly limit financial contact with ideologically incorrect sources of revenue that spread the diseased creed of consume consumption through mainstream media. Small potatoes newspapers take their begging bowls out on the street like hungry monks, or organize parties with music, poetry, food, and liquids, and pass the hat among fans, sympathizers, and rubberneckers who come through the door. It is obsession with the idea that all human beings ought by right of birth be free that keeps the majority of the poverty press struggling on. In particular, our national freedoms seem to be only wishful lies, bedtime stories told us by those we apparently select to lock our minds in chains to avoid responsibility or thought. Nearly everyone is fearful of the dangerous, uncertain period we are struggling to live through. No one seems to know what to do, and the simplest answers are probably wrong. Fear shows concern and masquerades as apathy. Truth becomes event, translated into entertainment. Small, independent publications that seldom make money are large on seeking answers and truths. Though never quite satisfyingly pure, truth must yet in the real world be free of deceit and distortion. It must be like a rock or a star, a fact defined by its existence. A cornerstone of the American Revolution and its subsequent Constitution was that not only would Americans be independent as a newly formed nation, but that each person was a citizen of a republic, which reflected the concern of the founders that both aristocracy and the masses provoked separate but equal problems. A free and unconstrained press was recognized as essential, and for more than a century, American journalism was robust, if partisan. Until 20th century journalism moved away from political feuding to promoting a corporate industrial status quo under the rubric of objectivity. The press itself became a huge corporate conglomerate of print, radio, television, and internet, now called, in capital letters, the media. The contrary press was relegated to the fringes and has generally acted as the mouthpiece for radical and esoteric political causes. It is called the alternative media, lowercase. Persistent efforts by government and powerful elites to dominate and manipulate public dialogue, particularly in matters of political dogma and social behavior, have always been dangerous and usually the guise for arbitrary usurpation of the apparatus of communication. Realization of this led directly to the Constitution's First Amendment, which states clearly and simply that neither government nor anybody else has the right to deny or interfere with freedoms of speech, press, or religion, or with public gatherings. It is unequivocal. Nothing shall abridge freedom of speech, therefore freedom of thought. It is our distinguishing ideal, unfortunately more in theory than actuality. Not our wealth or world power, nor our system of acquisition and consumption is as important as the inspired attempt to reverse history and make it possible for people to be free and independent under laws of their own choice. Article 1, Section 8 of Oregon's state constitution is even more insistent. No law shall be passed restraining the free expression of opinion or restricting the right to speak, write, or print freely on any subject whatever, but every person shall be responsible for the abuse of this right. Controversy, a dreaded word that is anathema to corporate megamedia, is the language of democracy, the robust dialectic of conflicting opinions. It implies debate, argument, even conflict of philosophies. It presumes an idealism born of human aspirations and experience. It demands intelligence beyond self-aggrandizement and simplified pontification. It requires serious rather than superficial or frivolous thought, not the zany, but petty trivial, without which political and personal independence dies. Without controversy, there is no dialogue, only obedience to edict and command. The only appropriate response to controversial or unpopular ideas is public rebuttal, not censorship. Yet those who claim to rule in democracy's name, in order to enlarge their own powers, continually attempt to limit the range of ideas and information necessary to engage in the argument of opinion that is indispensable to political and personal freedom. A few thousand low-profile publications constitute the alternative media in the USA, which includes blogs and zines, and perhaps half as many independent listener-sponsored radio stations, such as KMUN-FM in Astoria, with satellites for Warrenton and Tillamook, and Portland's KBOO. And they operate on the cutting edge of political, environmental, cultural, and ideological controversies, providing fresh ideas and insights that mainstream megamedia, initially reluctant to jeopardize its profits by espousing change or radical concepts, later trumpet as their own when some of the ideas catch on. Without an independent press, journalism is hardly more than an artfully deceptive method of misleading the public, of providing illusions and deceits to thwart public response to the chicaneries and jingoism of the corporate capitalist class, which regards itself as the country's rightful aristocracy, despite the admonition of history. The independent media in the United States and all over the world provides an indispensable forum for the exchange, analysis, synthesis, and arguments that are the basis of any culture or society. Their objectives are in microcosm the same as are debated everywhere on earth: to assist in the eradication of sexism, racism, poverty, and war, and to document the dooms and glooms, the perversities and horrors, rarely the triumphs, of our busy, ill-tempered species. Occasionally, a maverick, limited-distribution publication can reach into the heart of the nation. I.F. Stone's Weekly, for example, profoundly influenced a generation opposed to racism and a vicious, corrupt war, and was the archetype for numerous other alternative journals. Journalism comes in as many forms as music, high and lowbrow, elegant and classy, pop schmaltzy, hot and jazzy. Its purpose is an almanac of events, but also to pierce veils that spiderweb thought, imagination, and ideology. It is somewhat myopic to suggest that only conventional approaches to issues that critically affect society should be considered. The common ground, which is not represented by the mainstream media, despite its claims, is certainly a forum at which extremes meet and see rapprochement, but the more specific audience ought not to be ignored. It is just such esoteric publications, left or right, shrill or reasonable, that keep the self-styled mainstream media on a somewhat honest course and not entirely blown about by commercial interests and its own hubris. The mainstream media is no longer a corrective to the corruption and malfeasance of government and its evil axis of wealth and power. It acts as proselytizer, the conduit by which government boilerplates its transgressions to the public, and despite a few recent qualms of conscience, has generally acted as a cheering section, or perhaps more accurately, as a militarized propaganda platoon. The growth of huge media chains and entertainment networks, both nationally and worldwide, has long made news gathering and reporting hostage to advertising and profit, and concentration of ownership threatens the diversity of independent media. The trend is that mega corporations are increasingly in control of the information we receive and the influence political and legal decisions about its use and flow, such as a 1985 Oregon Supreme Court ruling that corporations, which are individuals under the law, cannot be investigated and reported about without great risk of libel suit. That ruling, which was against a Portland weekly newspaper and favored a major bank, said essentially that while celebrities of the moment can be inexhaustively exhumed in the media, institutions that affect the lives of millions are virtually sealed off from public scrutiny. Information presented to the American public is in the form of events, which is called news. Ideas and opinions are subdivided into editorial sections of mainstream newspapers or as commentary segments of radio TV broadcasts. Most men and women in the news gathering business do not think of themselves as propagandists or ideologues. On the contrary, most of them earnestly attempt the improbability of objective and unbiased recounting of incidents and facts, and sometimes account for ideas through the form of opinion polls. They try to treat news as raw history. But of course they reflect the contemporary and cultural biases of their society and ultimately of the industry they serve, the newspaper chain or radio television station or network conglomerate. A workable definition of information and the purposes it serves is essential, whether it is a source of public dialogue and crucial to an open society, or if it should be privately controlled to reflect only certain ideas and points of view. A corollary question is if the use and dissemination of information should be treated as a business regulated by a relative few who seek profit from it. A.J. Liebling, who is generally dyspeptic about subordination of information, caustically claimed that a free press existed only for those wealthy enough to own one. There are as many forms of communication as groups of special interest using them. It would seem that half the stars at night are communication satellites. They have forever changed radio, television programming, and access, and provide with fiber optics cables, computers, and fax machines, as well as the internet, cell phones, iPods, Blackberries, etc., instantaneous information worldwide. The proliferation of special interest groups, citizens groups, political action groups, even library boards and soap opera fan clubs have published newsletters, fanzines, videos, DVDs, tapes, newspapers, ad inestium, engage in political, religious, or business mass mailings, snail or email, own or syndicate programs on radio television stations or networks. All of this print and babble saturate us with information, virtually all of it self-promotional, biased, and of questionable veracity. The media, in all its hydroid forms, does an inadequate job. It is probably impossible to examine, publish, and broadcast the trillions of bits of data generated every day. There is too much to write about, to televise, and report, to think about, to debate and discuss, and it moves too quickly, changes too rapidly to pin down well enough despite the current 24-hour news cycle. Public apathy is not accidental or the result of not having access to information. It is most usually the opposite, a premeditated response to a society awash in paper and verbiage. We know too much. It is this which confounds the believers of information as the temple of freedom. To cull through the immensities of twaddle and drivel to discern what is pertinent, or work through the purposely misleading, might finally be too much to require or expect of a citizen. Suppression, after all, fires the wronged spirit. Gluttony buries it. The real purpose of the press, or media, is little understood, which is as much its own fault as it is from public skepticism and distrust. The people expect event and spectacle, which are ardently reported, and the infotainment machine provides instant celebrities and fashions. But the central function of the press is to act as the public conscience and critical watchdog of authority, the cry of alarm when authority is exceeded or corrupt. It must act as a forum and instrument of public dialogue and debate, presenting differing views, even as U.S. Supreme Court Justice Oliver Wendell Holmes wrote, "expressions of opinion that we loathe and believe to be fraught with death." Above all, it must be honest and open with its readers, its viewers, and listeners. A free and open flow of information, regardless of ideology or opinion, despite the strenuous job of separating truth from fiction, deceit, gossip, and obscenity, information from disinformation, is quite truthfully the only method of preserving what remains of our freedoms and enlarging them in a turbulent world, recoiling from morbid tyrannies that claim to be regimes of the people. And that's a quote. The continuity of a culture of so-called radical journalism is essential, which journalism schools seem to be breeding out of recent generations of young journalists in a quest for centrist or objective, again a quote, principles of news and commentary. It is crucial, for widely divergent views of everything have public conduits, and the very edgy, on-the-fringe media is just about all that persists against the conformatization of American media and society. The paradox, of course, is that fringe media is readily dismissed as not only being outside of mainstream centrist conformity, but also that it preaches to the fringe, and the great masses of Americans, of whom less than half generally vote, seldom read, watch, or listen to heretic or apostate media. Yet the choir must be kept up with trends of music, as medical people, the light speed changes in medicine. When what is considered a mainstream source of information becomes increasingly like Goebbels speak, Fox TV News, for example, the fringe media has to pick up the slack of the quickly disintegrating First Amendment. Although it might seem absurd to print newspapers in an era when print media is supposed to be dying as a result of the internet, and amidst a crippling recession depression, it is in such perilous, uncertain times that independent, nonprofit, to say the least, publications are most necessary. Printed independent papers or magazines, such as Hipfish and Astoria, must keep popping up because they are not simply fringe agitprop, but are more cogently the recurrent incubation of American journalism. And the more castrated and concentrated the mainstream media becomes, a painful and insipid form of oblivion, the more necessary for small, self-reliant, non-centralized publications and media to flower. It is not only necessary to speak truth to power, but also to egregious consumption and waste, to apathy and avarice. Truth must also speak to conscience, as well as to humanity's penchant for slaughtering itself and devastating the world it lives in. William Allen White wrote in a Pulitzer Prize-winning essay, "You say that freedom of utterance is not for times of stress, and I reply with the sad truth that only in times of stress is freedom of utterance in danger. No one questions it in calm days because it is not needed, and the reverse is true also. Only when free utterance is suppressed is it needed, and when it is most needed, it is most vital to justice. This state is in more danger from suppression than from violence. Violence, indeed, is the child of suppression." And that was William Allen White. And I'd like to finish by quoting a quip from the Born Again Birds decennial. "Printing an unprofitable newspaper of limited interest and circulation at the beginning of a post-literate era can be frustrating and perhaps only slightly justified because it comes from the heart. The North Coast Times Eagle has yet to break even on a single issue, a now," and that was 25 years, "record which is surely must be worth a category in Guinness. But enough of money. It's the eagle's blood, not its heart. Profit and loss are mechanical processes like digestion. What matters is if the born-again bird, at all, is not simply wasting paper. As the first editorial suggested, it seems quaint to produce a small, impoverished publication at a time when vast political, military, corporate systems imprint their oppressive agendas upon billions. But Moses Ash, who founded Folkway Records on a shoestring and seldom made a dime in 40 years, realized long ago that the very small can grow and relatively prosper in between the cracks of the mega-big, like ferns on a forest floor. Mouses must roar after all and bite at the ankles of ponderous tyrannies if we are to keep our heads and humor. Micromedia, flamboyant, irreverent, raffish, and patched, is on the march into the 21st century." And that was more or less from the 25th anniversary issue of the Times Eagle, and also from 10 years earlier. And this has been Michael McCusker, former publisher of the former North Coast Times Eagle. I might be back next week if certain things do not happen, such as falling into the river, the sky falling, or one of those drones incinerating me on a sidewalk. You've been listening to A Story Told. I'm Michael McCusker.